Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Connie Stratzheim, who is the author of Beyond Lyme's Disease. She has some other books that I have also read, Insights into Lyme's Disease, and I guess we'll ask her the other books that she has. I know she's a co-author with Dr. Cowden. We interviewed Dr. Cowden on his series of books, the first in his series on detox. And basically, these books are great for physicians and patients alike who are dealing with very complicated chronic illnesses, multifactorial, including immune deficiencies from a number of different things, endocrine dysfunction, neurological problems, often with mold biotoxins, candidiasis, intracellular infections of many different types. But essentially, this whole section of disease is labeled chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, other chronic disease that the traditional medical people say they don't know the cause of, but people who are integrative holistic doctors do have a pretty good idea of the cause as well as the treatment. Thank you, Connie, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dr. Kolb. It's an honor to be here today with you. I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, well, let's go back and talk about some of the books that you've written, because I actually use some of the books that you write in my treatment of people,
you.
And I guess I've been remiss in not having you on the radio show sooner. I probably should have. Were your I remember Insights into Lyme Disease, but did you have books before that?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, my first book was The Lyme Disease Survival Guide, but that was more a book based on my own experience, and, you know, it's called Physical, Lifestyle, and Emotional Strategies for Healing, so it's really heavy on things that you need to do from a lifestyle perspective to get better,
mm-hmm.
And there's some information in there, but it's not as up-to-date and as comprehensive as what's in Insights into Lyme Disease Treatment, which is the doctor interview book that I wrote in 2008
right.
while living in Costa Rica. And then after that, I have also a doctor interview book on cancer called Defeat Cancer. I have a book on spiritual healing. And then I just finished a three-book series called The Journey to Wellness with Dr. Cowden. And the first book in that series, you know, Create a Toxin-Free Body and Home. Starting today,
mm-hmm.
we released that last month. And next week, we're releasing a book called Foods That Fit a Unique You, which is based on the idea that no two people have the same biochemistry, and so we all have unique nutritional requirements for our bodies. And then the third book in the series, which is coming out in October, is Bioenergetic Tools for Wellness. And it's basically how to use energy medicine in its different forms and devices and things like that to test for illness. And then it also goes through just a real comprehensive list of different energy healing modalities. So, yeah, it's kind of a mishmash of a lot of different things because, you know, I had chronic Lyme disease, but my passion has extended to a lot of other areas of medicine because when you get chronic Lyme, you learn that the problem isn't usually just some Lyme disease bugs. And so, you know, in all these complex chronic illnesses, as you say, like the chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, a lot of the others that are really just labels that mean, you know, we don't know what's wrong with you. And so, you know, where I'm trying to expand my writing now is to talk about the other factors that make people with a number of different chronic illnesses sick, because a lot of times there are things that all these chronic illnesses have in common.
Yeah, you start off Beyond Lyme Disease, which is the book we're discussing today, talking about the adrenal thyroid problems, mm-hmm. which I think almost everybody just about everybody. Occasionally, thyroid will be okay in my experience, but adrenals are always affected. And I think that the reason mainstream medicine can't understand this is because it's not a primary thyroid problem. Sometimes it can be a primary adrenal problem, but most of the time it's the hypothalamus that's affected. And it mm-hmm. seems that mold biotoxins as well as chemical toxins can affect the hypothalamus, causing what we would call a secondary adrenal and thyroid insufficiency. And this is missed by most traditional doctors because the lab tests, especially the thyroid tests, are often normal.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, the HPA axis in Lyme disease and chronic illness, I think it can be off for a number of different reasons. And the thing that I noticed within the Lyme disease community is that physicians, not all of them, of course, but a lot of physicians would treat the adrenal insufficiency as though it were always exclusively a result of Lyme disease, which obviously Lyme disease causes adrenal insufficiency, but I think adrenal insufficiency can be primary, or, you know, the HPA dysfunction can be primary, as you said, cause like chemical mm-hmm. toxins, but also things like emotional trauma, which, you know, when your body's in fight or flight because of a trauma or because you're in a stressful situation over time, that breaks down the immune system, and I think then it opens the doors for bugs to come in. And so if you're treating the bugs, you're treating just the end result. You're not treating the initial cause, which is the trauma or the stressors. But once the body falls apart, then, of course, you can't just treat the infections. You've got to treat the endocrine system, but also get to the root of the trauma that keeps your body in that fight or flight mode. So anyway, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to run on there. I was going to add something about my
that's fine. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, and I think this was the case with me, because when I got sick with chronic Lyme disease, or before that, I had had a number of stressful events in my life. I was a flight attendant when 9/11 happened. I knew I had colleagues on the airplanes that crashed into the Twin Towers, and then there were some other stressful things, and it triggered the onset of a panic disorder, and I was living in such a heightened state of fear for several years prior to getting sick with Lyme, that I knew that my body would not hold up under that kind of stress and that kind of fear. And that's exactly what happened. Is 3 years later, then my body broke down, and it's kind of like then the Lyme infections came out and they flourished. And so the initial trigger for me, really, I don't think was the infections. I think it was the stressors which brought down the immune function. So, you know,
yeah,
I just encourage people to think about that.
I'm very suspicious that, especially in certain parts of the country, the majority of people have been exposed to these intracellular infections. You know, mycoplasma, all of the spirochetes. And I also suspect that there's intracellular infections that we can't test for, that we don't even know about. Because, and there's also viral illnesses. Viruses like HHV6 are prevalent because the immune system is impaired, especially T-cell immunity is impaired. So, you know, one of the things that, addressing the immune problem is, in my experience, one of the best things to do. Also, of course, you need to balance the endocrine problems. You need to address, you know, dietary deficiencies. You need to address stress. You know, all of these things are important, but I think at the core of it, the immune system is critical to treat, and I didn't remember seeing it in your book. It may be in here, but one of the things we're doing, if the patient's not on narcotics, is putting them on low-dose naltrexone, which has a remarkable effect at bringing the T-cell immunity back up. And mm-hmm. so irregardless of why it's down, getting it back up is very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Kolb. And I think when I wrote Beyond Lyme Disease, it's funny because I almost put a chapter in there on immune deficiency, but then I thought, well, when you have HPA axis dysfunction, you know, that's part of the endocrine system, as is the mm-hmm. GI tract. But in reality, you know, because the GI tract, obviously, you know, we've got all these beneficial microbes that protect us against incoming bacteria, viruses, parasites from the environment, but it's, mm-hmm. and it's crucial component of the immune system, and GI dysfunction is one of the things that I talk about in the book as, you know, setting mm-hmm. the body up for this. But there are many aspects to immune function, and it would have been a great idea, I think, to have added a chapter in there on that. So, but I agree with you absolutely. I've tried the naltrexone, and it's quite amazing. You got to get that inflammation down, and in a normal immune response.
I want to tell you something, a secret of mm-hmm. low-dose naltrexone that I kind of found out by accident, but it was on purpose. It was kind of my spiritual guides tricked me into this. It was kind of funny. When I muscle tested for it, I muscle tested for 3 milligrams, and at the time I thought only 3 and 4.5 were the only two doses. But then after I got the 3 milligrams, I was told that I had to take 2 of them. And I've tested hundreds of people. And if you weigh over 125, 6 milligrams is the optimal dosage, not 4.5.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it really is true. It is really true. 6 milligrams is needed at higher weights. So, you know, I went back to try to figure out how the doctor who discovered low-dose naltrexone came up with 4.5, and I think it was just pulled out of thin air. He might have had a lot of thin patients, because, as you know, a lot of chronic fatigue patients can't put weight on. So, that
absolutely
may have been it. But I have a lot of mold-toxic patients who have leptin deficiencies, and they put 55 pounds on without trying. So it's very important. Well, I wanted to mention, as I mentioned to you before we came on the show, my practice is full of patients with foreign bodies, a lot of breast implants, but also chin implants, you know, testicular implants, you know, whatever, buttocks implants. But when it comes down to having foreign material in your body, if you're exposed to anything that can create a biofilm, and I believe, you know, parasites, viruses, bacteria and mold, as well as yeast, which is very common, especially if you've been on antibiotics, you get these biofilms around these foreign bodies, and they cause symptoms, discomfort, and the traditional doctors are mistaken thinking that if you have an infected prosthesis or internal prosthesis or implant, it's going to present with redness and swelling and pus, but it doesn't. What it does, it just hurts or burns, especially if it's mold. You can get a burning pain. So, and some of them early on have no symptoms at all, because the nerves were cut around it, like some can sometimes happen in breast implants, or they just don't have bacteria yet. So the mold is there and creating problems, but it's not, you know, you can do a visual contrast sensitivity test and see that the right implant has mold because the right eye is affected, but the left eye isn't because the left implant doesn't have mold, which is really weird, but that's the way it works. I know. But in any case, the biofilm around the implant might be the source of the, you know, the infection that is keeping the patient's immune system down. And as you stated early in your book, and I know to be true, tick bites are not the only way we get intracellular infections. MS, for example, is most likely an intracellular spirochete and maybe a mycoplasma, but definitely a spirochete because Dr. Lydia Matman found 30 MS patients having the same intracellular spirochete.
Wow.
In the textbooks, especially the esoteric medical textbooks, it says that MS is caused by exposure to small dogs. Well, dogs have ticks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they lick the face. And we know very well that all of these intracellular infections can be transmitted sexually and therefore by saliva, you know, just in general droplet transmission. And there you have it. There you have it. And also rheumatoid arthritis. Half of rheumatoid arthritis is found to have an intracellular mycoplasma, according to Dr. Garth Nicholson. And again, the esoteric old medical literature says it's transmitted by small dogs. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe small dogs lick your face more than large dogs. You see what I mean? People sleep with small dogs, but not with large. You know, I mean, maybe. Anyway, it's probably all dogs. And it might be cats, too. I'm not going to be, you know, just picking on one animal group. But the idea is multiple insect bites, multiple modes of transmission, including sexual. We have a huge source of these intracellular and also viral infections, HHV6, affecting the T cells.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this is transmissible.
Yeah,
and so your only defense is your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if your immune
Absolutely.
System is down, everything is open season.
Yeah, and that's the problem with antibiotics, Dr. Kolb, is I know that they're necessary for some people with chronic Lyme disease who have really virulent infections and their bodies are being taken down quickly. But my personal preference is always to try the natural remedies first, because the antibiotics, will just take out all your beneficial bacteria, which are part of your body's immune system, that which help it,
right,
you know, defend against these things. And as you know, as you said, the all these diseases, these things like MS, you know, Parkinson's, a lot of neurodegenerative diseases have an infectious component, and they've correlated high levels of MS with the areas in the country where there's a lot of Lyme disease. And so, mm-hmm, you know, there's been no definitive connection saying, well, MS is always caused by Lyme disease. But it's interesting that, you know, in the regions of the country where MS is high, Lyme disease is also high. So that's fascinating. And then the animals, too, like you said, those, you know, the animals bring in all kinds of stuff from outdoors.
Well, I can tell you why it's not known. Dr. Lydia Mattman told me that she was given a court order by the federal government not to tell this to any doctors. It's not known because anytime any research... Now, Dr. Lydia Mattman is the author of Cell Wall Deficient Forms, and she's a PhD who wrote the textbook on intracellular infections. Okay? So she's an expert. She can't share it with anybody because it's the basis of our biological warfare system.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, you got to wonder
about
that.
The truth.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Garth Nicholson wrote a book called Project A Lily. It's a fiction book, but it's not really, where he outlines the four assassination attempts he and his wife had because he was revealing that mycoplasma was part of the biological warfare system. You know, it was a weaponized mycoplasma called mycoplasma fermentans, yeah. So, you know, basically that's why no funds will ever be given to study this, and yet... Millions of Americans we've actually achieved the biological warfare effects in our population.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, millions of Americans are on Social Security disability and unable to work because they have what is essentially a biological warfare weapon illness and then the doctors are, you know, hauled and their medical license taken away and all these other things because they are studying it and treating it.
Yeah, anyone who's having that success. And then there aren't, you know, they outlaw things like dark field microscopy where all you have to do is look at a drop of blood and see all the bugs, you know, in your body. And so, I hear you on that. I was a good friend of Les Roberts, who wrote the book The Poison Plum, which talks about, you know, how Lyme disease got it, or its origins in, as a biowarfare organism. And he was given the idea to write the book, and he had never written a book before, and he wrote the whole thing down in a matter of weeks. It was almost like it was, you know, divinely given to him. And, and you know, he wrote this book, and, you know, I believe he had threats against his life and things like that, too. And he's since passed away, but it was just really fascinating, the correlations in that book. So, yeah, and that's the sad thing then, too, is you think there are a lot of people that are unaware of what they have and why they've got symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctors that are really sticking their necks out to treat people with these things are, I think they're to be commended because they are risking their licenses today.
Yeah. You know, we're hopeful now that, especially now that integrative holistic medicine is being recognized by the American Board of Medical Specialties, and of course, almost all of the Lyme's doctors are integrative holistic doctors, you know, who are well-educated in functional medicine. You have to be, because you can't really treat Lyme's without understanding functional medicine. And, we're hopeful that maybe... because you're boarded in it, there'll be some protection. But of course, you know, it's really sad. I mean, mold biotoxin disease is also another one that many doctors lose their license over if they try to publish. I mean, I just basically don't publish. I wrote The Naked Truth About Breast Implants for the patients, but, you know, Andrew Campbell called me up, wanted me to publish something on mold and breast implants, and I know very well that I can't publish. I mean, that just would
be... So those are the ones that are targeted to publish.
I think so. I think, you know, the government will target those people. I think industry targets you otherwise. I mean, I think I personally have been targeted by industry, but not by government. You know, in other words, the the medical board licensing thing is mostly when the government doesn't want you to be publishing. Because the, you know, it's more, I'm not sure industry can control the medical boards. And Georgia's a right to treat state, so as long as somebody has something that's life-threatening and there's a scientific basis to it, it's difficult to take our medical licenses away.
Well, it's interesting.
So that's the political, political side of things.
Sure. Well, and that's it. You know, I think the same people, when they get sick with a chronic illness and they don't find help in conventional medicine, the thing that I always tell people is that medicine, conventional medicine, is foremost based on money, not science. And so to keep that in mind when you're trusting your doctor's decisions and ask yourself, well, do you think the recommendation for this drug is based on, you know, something that was recommended to the doctor from the pharmaceutical industry? Is it something they were, or is it based on the science and what has worked for that doctor? And so, you know, I just always tell people, think about that. You know, when you're deciding to go do chemotherapy or a conventional treatment, and I think conventional treatments have their place, but again, you have to realize that it's an industry based foremost on money and only secondarily on science. But you know, the whole point, like you mentioned, the mold. The whole point of me writing the book Beyond Lyme Disease was to illustrate to people that Lyme disease isn't just an infection, or it's not just about a bunch of infections. It's about all of these other things that go wrong in the body. And sometimes, like for instance, you're talking about mold. That can be a primary cause of symptoms, and so you've got to, you know, I've known people with Lyme, they focused on the mold and they got better, you know, and
right.
And so that was the primary thing. But anyway, that's kind of
The way I look at it is that you have all these different stressors on the body, including psychological and emotional stressors, because, you know, if you get a big emotional upset, your immune system just plummets. So you have all these stressors, heavy metals, diet, you know, bad diet, mold, biotoxins, you know, just all of the different things that you mentioned in your book. And then that suppresses your immune system to a certain level. When the immune system is down far enough, both cancer and intracellular infections can occur. I mean, that's really that's really what happens. So, you know, my personal belief is that there's some of us that weren't exposed because of geography, but most of us have been exposed, especially if we've lived in several parts of the United States during our life, most of us have been exposed to at least one kind of intracellular infection or HHV6. And HHV6 itself, because it targets the T cells, is a particularly, you know, unpleasant one to have. But in any case, the idea is that once your immune system goes below a certain level, then you do get ill with a number of things. It's not just one thing. Parasites can come out then too, because I believe the body's immune system didn't hold them in check. You know, it's not,
right.
I mean, I think we're all exposed to parasites. It's how good the body does, you know, getting rid of them.
And you can't fight just the end result. You have to go to the cause, which is an unhealthy terrain, inner terrain.
Right. Biological terrain, exactly.
And work on those other factors.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about mold biotoxin disease as relates to the breast implant patients, and give you some of the things we're doing that are a little bit different. I've interviewed Richie Shoemaker several times, and he's a wonderful, you know, wonderful information, but he is more traditional medical and not so much integrative holistic. We had large number of patients with mold in and around their breast implants, and the mold was growing in the saline. I even had one patient who had anaphylactic reactions if anybody hugged her too hard, and it turned out she had penicillamine in the implant, and she was allergic to penicillin. So that's a problem.
Wow.
Anyway,
yeah.
But so we just shot the second episode of Monsters Inside Me, and it's going to be on the 13th of November. The first episode of Monsters Inside Me was Aspergillus causing a black implant, and that was in Catherine Gordon. That showed in 2012. It is available to be seen on the internet if you Google all that. But yeah. She basically was breastfeeding, got a mastitis. Kaiser put her on antibiotics without antifungals, and she grew out this, her breast implant got black with mold, and she was deathly ill, and it was actually an interesting story because she was contemplating suicide, but she had a dream that night that it really was her breast implants causing her problems, because she knew that, but all her doctors and her husband didn't think it was, and she decided not to kill herself, but called me the next day, and then I got her implant out, and then she went on to be in Glamour magazine, and she did a number of different things, Vanity and Sanity, and Monsters Inside Me. The second patient we did this time has more of a, not a black implant. She did have aspergillus in the implant, but it was more the biotoxins, not the mold itself. The biotoxins were, and she improved, but she did not recover completely, because as you know, when you have these biotoxin illnesses and are unable to get away from mold, she currently lives in a trailer. But anytime she goes into houses in Florida, she gets very, very sick. She's just extremely sensitive to mold biotoxins. So I guess it's more of a caveat saying be very careful, you know, if you have fibromyalgia, which is often mold biotoxin, to get breast implants. Because if you ever got a massive biotoxin exposure in your breast implants, you might be chronically ill for the rest of your life. In our experience, most people get much better, but they still get sicker quicker, like Richie says. So obviously getting the implants out are very important. You have to take the whole capsule out, putting them on antifungals, usually for several months, switching the antifungals around because, of course, mold makes spores, and spores are hard to get out of the body. And then the other thing is treating the environment. I like to use the ozonator as well as something where I mix these with menthol and use the cold diffusers. Works well. It's cheap. And then to get the mold biotoxins out of the patient, we have, if they muscle test for it, mold Sporox, which is really good. And if anybody has a mold disease, you know, where they get sick with biotoxin exposure, that taking the mold Sporox will really eliminate the fatigue and all the symptoms really quickly.
What's that stuff of? What is it?
Called mold. It's a combination of a number of herbals that was made by Dr. Overman, who was a naturopath. He's no longer with us, but he had spiritual hearing, and he made some remarkable products. So mold Sporox is S-P-O-R-E-X. I'm sorry. Mold and then S-P-O-R-E-X. And you take 4 twice a day, and that just really eliminates mold biotoxins in your body. Now, instead of cholestyramine, which I find hard to use because of the constipation, you have to remember all my patients are having surgery, so they're in Demerol, and constipation after surgery is prevalent. So CSM doesn't work very well for them. I use Welbedix, which is, I think Michael Murray developed Welbedix. He's a naturopath that's pretty famous. It also grabs biotoxins and takes them out through the stool. But the Welbedix is a weight loss supplement, essentially, and a fiber. Doesn't cause constipation. For surgery patients. We use Buterin if they muscle test for it. That knocks the biotoxin off the cell membrane, especially when they have massive neurological symptoms. And by the way, some of my patients have high levels of myelin basic protein antibody with brain lesions and spinal cord lesions, and they look just like MS patients, but they don't have MS. They have mold biotoxins. So Buterin's extremely important for them. And then, of course, lipospheric glutathione and lipospheric vitamin C are very good, or other glutathiones. But I like the zomal products just because you get high levels and they're cheaper than the IVs. My patients don't have a lot of money because they haven't been working. You know, they're in the bed. They're sick.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's well, what we that, do for those patients.
And it sounds, I mean, you know, Dr. Kolb, all of that, those type of things are gentler on the body. Because people, what I found, you know, when I was really sick and I had mold toxicity, the cholestyramine lowered my blood pressure, and I already had low blood pressure from adrenal fatigue, so it was really
right.
hard to
that talk. Wasn't good.
No,
yeah,
and so knowing
right.
that these other options out there is really essential. And, mm-hmm. you know, like I say, I'll tell people with Lyme, test for mold as well, because that could be, because, like, you know, you said it can produce lesions the same as Lyme. The symptoms mimic Lyme a lot of times, and so it's good to discern
yes,
that.
Yeah.
Too. So, but
then the other
yeah.
thing I wanted to mention is one of my patients from Florida, where there's a lot of Lyme disease, told me that she was in the IV room, and she had breast implants, and she had Lyme disease, and she failed the oral antibiotic and ended up in the IV room. She said she looked around the IV room, almost everybody's women, and almost all of them have breast implants.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so could it be that a biofilm and mold biotoxins in the body where you can never get away from them might make it so that Lyme disease and other intracellular infections simply can't be successfully treated? And
yeah.
I think that's true, because when we get the implants out, we often can get rid of the intracellular infections. Which
well, then you mentioned the biofilms, too. And the biofilms is
yeah.
interesting in itself, because I think you can treat Lyme disease or mold or any of these other infections that we talk about, but if you don't address the biofilm, a lot of that infection can still remain, you know, hidden and from the immune system in the body. And so I think there's been more focus in recent years on breaking down the biofilm, as well as just, you know, giving the patient antimicrobials. And so you mentioned that. Do you use a special type of agent to break down the biofilms in people with the breast implants, or what do you find is helpful?
You know,
for that?
We don't, because you know, I do a lot of my work with clairvoyant input, and I had. You know, because I've had the radio show for 17 years, I've interviewed all of the major clairvoyants in the world. So you know,
oh, wow.
I can use clairvoyant information, and the clairvoyant information is, it doesn't matter what you do, you're never going to break down the biofilm around a breast implant. You got to remove the capsule. Okay, so
yeah.
we don't try, but I think Premier makes Dr. Gould, who's one of the doctors, he's a Millennium Healthcare doctor here, family practice doctor, really brilliant in terms of all of this. He says Premier makes a product that breaks down the biofilm that he likes. I can't remember the name of it now, but there are other products that do break down biofilms that are probably very important to be used in certain patients with intracellular infections.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I had found in my own healing journey that when I was knocking off the bugs, it's like at some point I stopped having detox reactions, but I knew there was still infection there. And then, you know, when my doctor came up with a combination of biofilm busters, then I started that, you know, when I started taking those, then I started having mm-hmm. some detox reactions again, which told me that it was getting to the deeper levels of the infection. So, and I've, you know, and I've
right.
also found too, you can test negative on a bioenergetic test, on a Zyto, and even through muscle testing, if you've got bugs inside a biofilm, it's almost like, I don't know if the body doesn't recognize
they're
them
hidden.
When they're in them. Yeah, they're just hidden.
Yeah.
And
hidden.
So,
right.
you know, the only way to know is if you do other types of testing methods, like the dark field
mm-hmm.
microscopy, you know,
right.
To Mexico for, but I know that some people probably use them here. I don't know if there are any situations in which they're legal, but you have to go deeper with the testing. And sometimes just, you know,
mm-hmm.
I know there are doctors that will just empirically treat a patient if they suspect the infections are there, even if they come up negative on a test, because as you know, too, none
mm-hmm.
of the tests are completely accurate when you're looking at this
right.
stuff. Because we've also got, you know, besides the fact that the body doesn't make antibodies or, you know, or recognize the foreign protein, then you've got all these infections
mm-hmm.
that no test developed for yet, and so
right.
you know that's another aspect to it. That's another thing I talk about in my Lyme disease books, because you know people go in and they get a test and it's negative. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you don't have the intercellular Lyme disease infections or other types of infections, the parasites especially. You know, there's a lot of parasites can cling to the walls of your intestinal tract, and you do a stool sample, and it's going to come out negative because, you know, they're not releasing parts of the parasite or the eggs into the stool sample. So anyway, that's just another aspect.
Yeah. What are some of the things that break down biofilms that you recommend?
Well, Dr. Klinghart has a product that I don't know if he still recommends a lot, but it's called Rex Regulat, which is fermented enzymes. And it's a little bit pricey, but it seems to me to be stronger than some of the systemic enzymes that are used, like natokinase.
What is it called again? What is it called again?
Yes, it's called Rex Regulat, and it's spelled R-E-C-H-T-S. It's from Germany, so that's why it's got kind of a strange name. And then the Latin part of it is R-E-G-U-L-A-T, Regulat. And I'll have doctors that say, well, some people require heparin, that the enzymes really aren't enough. But the problem with heparin sometimes, a large percentage of the population is allergic to heparin. And so if you have a reaction, the detox or the body having an allergic reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's just one product.
I'll tell you what I was guided to use, and you can tell me if you think it works. Natokinase, 6 a day.
I don't know. See, I think when the dose on that was, if it's too low, it probably depends on the person that... I don't know if it works. It might be the dosing, but it's because 6 a day, I think, is a little bit higher than what some doctors have, that I've seen doctors recommend.
Definitely. But that's the one for the biofilm. That's the dose for the biofilm. Yeah. Of course, you do have to be careful you're not on anything else that thins the blood.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the people, although I think that I found it, the people with the chronic Lyme disease, that the blood tends to be too thick, but that's something you want to monitor. So, like people that are on heparin, you got to do a blood test every couple weeks.
Right. Yeah. True. But you kind of know. I mean, I give myself a B12 shot, so if I'm over anticoagulated, I know it because it bleeds from the injection site. Yeah. There's other ways to monitor whether you're bruising and that kind of thing too, but. But you're right. But that's what I was guided to do, was natokinase. And it will break down biofilms in the blood. I mean, it will.
Pretty good. And I think it depends on the person, too, because I found lumbrokinase was one that was a little more effective for me. But lumbrokinase is more expensive, I think. And so if you can use the
natokinase. Is pretty expensive, too.
I might be wrong. But not incorrectly, but I thought the lumbrokinase was more, but maybe, you know, I think they're both really good systemic enzymes, and definitely people that have had chronic Lyme and these intercellular infections have benefited from them. So.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit about parasite infections, because I had something strange happen to me that really brought home the fact that parasites are usually not able to be diagnosed, or often not able to be diagnosed by any regular diagnostic test, and that probably the majority of people have a fair number of parasites by the time they're 45. I had we have a meditation group we do every week, and we had a physicist as part of the group, and he got a message for me it was critical that I start taking ivermectin. And as a physicist, he didn't know what ivermectin was. You know, he just heard the word ivermectin. So I started on it, and then it was back in 2012. We were going to be filming Monsters Inside Me, but I had not watched Monsters Inside Me any time. So the producers wanted me to TiVo it. So I TiVo'd it, and at the same time, I was getting bug bites all over me, these large bug bites that I thought, like, bugs were biting me. Yeah, but they were pretty large. They were probably about 4 centimeters in diameter. So I watched The Monsters Inside Me, and it was the one on nathostomiasis. And the lady had these big bug bites on her. It just looked just like my bug bites. Well, it turned out I had eaten lox and bagels at Einstein Brothers. I really didn't ever eat sushi, but I'd been eating lox and bagels at Einstein Brothers because I liked it. And I believe I got natho there because it was the only place I got it, or I was ever exposed to anything. and natto is only freshwater fish. So I had I ended up with several hundred of these big bug bites. So they don't reproduce in the body, but natto is very dangerous. It can cause you to go blind, even kill you if it gets in the brain.
Oh my God.
So it also causes cancer. It's very much associated with cancer. So I ended up getting rid of it by going on 9 months of antiparasitics, praziquantel, ivermectin, and bilgericide. I'm sorry, and albendazole. And I did it, cycling and muscle testing and everything, but finally got rid of it. But I'm beginning to think that we probably ought to put most people in their 40s on antiparasitics, and maybe we won't have such a rash of cancer when they're 50 and 60. I think it would be very helpful, because there's no way to know. I mean, you could use, use your kinesiology and your Zeto testing and everything, but there's no traditional way that I would have ever known I had natto until I had cancer. That would have been my first sign. Now, the reason why the ivermectin worked was that it forced the parasite to the surface of the skin, and the little parasite was coming out through the center of those bug bites. It looked like a hair.
Wow, isn't that something? Well,
that's kind of an interesting story.
Sure. No, I mean, that's fascinating. I just interviewed Dr. Omar Amin, who is the owner of a parasitology testing center in Arizona. And, he's a world-renowned parasitologist. And, because I do doctor interviews for the Alternative Cancer Research Institute, and he was sharing with me that there are a number of specific cancers associated with specific parasites. And he mentioned one that...
There are.
And he'll say this is, and so, they do extensive parasite testing and things like that, but he had some interesting stories as well with people with different diseases, and one he mentioned was a parasite, and I'm actually forgetting the name of it, but he said it depletes vitamin B12 in the body, and so there was a woman with Alzheimer's that had Alzheimer's because of the parasite, and he said that once they got treated the parasite and brought her B12 levels up, she started... the Alzheimer's symptoms started going away, and so it's really fascinating. You just don't know. And he mentioned correlations between this kind of parasite and pancreatic cancer, and I can't remember all the names, but I agree with you that there's a lot of parasitic infection. There tends to be this notion that in the United States we don't have parasites, it's a third world phenomenon, but not really. They've done studies, and for instance, Dr. Omar Amin believes that at least half the population has them, and that's a conservative estimate, probably, because they through the water and the food, and he also had another interesting fact, which was he said that a lot of the vegetables that are shipped from Mexico to states on the West Coast, they use human fertilizer to fertilize the vegetables. Well, what happens is that fertilizer carries parasites, and so he says, when you're washing your vegetables, you've got to wash them in Clorox or really strong vinegar solution, because there's really not, there are just so many ways that you can get them, and the prevention becomes important if you treat them, because there's just so many ways they can get into the body, and as I mentioned in Beyond Lyme Disease, the parasites, there are doctors that have, I know at least in the past, physicians like Dr. Klinghardt have mentioned that he believed that the parasites can be in an even bigger deal than the chronic Lyme infection. So I agree with you should all do some kind of parasite cleanse periodically.
Yeah, the other thing that is effective against parasites and intracellular infections is the harmonic quad or the zapper. I did interview Dr. Clark on this radio show before she died. She was actually in Mexico, and she came over to San Diego because she didn't trust the telephone lines in Mexico, but that was really amazing because there was a warrant out for her arrest. So she risked that to be on the radio show.
Wow.
So her interview was fascinating. She said that a lot of the fruits and vegetables also got asbestos in them, because the belts that they're using to have them on have asbestos. And so she determined pretty much with intuitive techniques that asbestos was present in the skin of the apples and stuff. and or other fruits when you were eating the skins, that it was a good idea not to do that if indeed they had asbestos in them. So she tracked down a number of things that were contributing to cancer, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, she's brilliant, and I mean, I've done her liver cleanses and things like that, and she's a brilliant, brilliant researcher.
So, I guess what I'd like to talk about now is a little bit about the non-antibiotic treatment of intracellular infections. Would you give us what the doctors recommend and what you've tried?
Yeah, you know, Dr. Cole, I've done a lot of different things. You know, besides the antibiotics, I've done herbal remedies. Stephen Herod Buhner is known in the Lyme disease community for his herbal protocols. So, and then also Dr. William Bowden, I've done some of his stuff. And then I've also done things like, you know, Rife machine technology. And it's interesting because I've found that no strategy in and of itself really was sufficient. It was kind of working with all these other things in the body. But I think high doses of, if I were to say, you know, I've got all these intercellular infections, I would always try using the herbal remedies first with good biofilm busters and, you know, perhaps even things like MMS, you know, the miracle mineral supplement, which is essentially chlorine dioxide. And there's some controversy around it, but for things like parasites, which, you know, some doctors will say you've got to use drugs because the herbs aren't strong enough. I think some believe that, you know, MMS can be a viable alternative to kind of the heavy duty parasitic yeast infections. And I've used that as well. And it did cause a massive detox reaction. It also made me very sick. But when I used it, I wasn't under the care of a doctor, which I probably should have been. So, but I found that the herbal remedies, if they were rotated enough, if they were at high enough doses, if they had the biofilm busters, they really were able to knock back the pathogen load a lot and not compromise my body in the same way as the antibiotics. So you have to always look. I think, you know, what I found, I have a sensitive constitution, and I think there are people that, you know, they get on these strong medications and they get worse because they don't, their bodies can't handle it or they don't have the support they need. And so it really, you know, people say, what did you do to get rid of the bugs? I tell them, but I also say everyone's an individual and no two people can do the same thing. And I know, you know, the guy I worked with that published my first books, he Brian Rosner, he got well with Rife machine therapy, but he also he's very intuitive, and he found that he just knew that was going to work for him. But I think most people, if they do Rife machine therapy, they've also still got to use some sort of antimicrobial remedies, and whether those are from Buhner or Cowden or any number of the Lyme literate doctors that are out there, you know, you've got to combine these a lot. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but you know, there are all kinds of explanations.
Yeah. What I would recommend too is that you use some testing, either the Zeto machine that Dr. Cowden uses, or applied kinesiology if you're comfortable with that. It's a lot cheaper, some method like that to really, and test every month before you continue on something, including the antibiotics and the antifungals. I found it's critical, if people are on antibiotics, that they be placed on antifungals, at least my patient population. They don't well with...
Yeah, you make a good point, Dr. Cole, because then you're dealing, if you're not on the antifungals, then you have a completely new problem once you're, you know, you don't just have live infections. And as you know, the fungal infections can be just as insidious. And, you know, and I know doctors that will use, they'll combine muscle testing with lab tests and the Zyto with lab tests. And I think that that's a really good way to do it. Also, if you can find a physician that does both things, because I think both reveal things that the others do not. Definitely the Zyto. And if you have someone who's experienced in muscle testing, then you can find things in the body that the lab tests aren't going to reveal. So, but I always tell people, you got to make sure that the doctor is really experienced in the muscle testing
right.
or the that they use, because otherwise you get inaccurate results.
Right. Well, and the other thing I like to do is if somebody has like seven things wrong with them, I like to figure out what you need to treat first and second. Because there's probably something that's more critical than other things. So, finding out all of the different components of the disease is important than using muscle testing to determine what to treat with and in what order. Because, you can't just put somebody on a whole bunch of stuff at once. You have to kind of phase it in, phase it out.
Yeah, because the body would get overloaded. But I do, the other thing is, when people have infections, you've got to also work with a doctor. I tell people it's good to work with a doctor that's really experienced and also supporting the body and helping the body to detox, because so many people with chronic illness, for instance, have methylation defects. And so, if
that's
you're not
true.
Supporting the liver, then you can knock off these infections and you're just going to kind of go into a permanent Herxheimer reaction. And so I found that was really critical for me. It was like, wow. And even like restoring, one of the things to talk about in Beyond Lyme Disease is the, the neurotransmitters and the hormones, the brain chemistry, because that for me was actually the biggest piece of my recovery, because my neuroendocrine system was so messed up from the bugs and different things that when I started supporting that, started supporting the methylation pathways, then it seemed like my body was more able to get rid of the bugs. So that's just another piece of it, I think.
Yeah, one of the things I discovered is when treating the methylation defects, if you're treating with methylfolate, it's better just to give it once a week rather than every day, because if you give the methylfolate every day, all the viruses start to grow like crazy. So we just give the methylfolate once a week. Sometimes they test for methyl B12 every day, injection. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of injection for the B12 just because the gut's not absorbing it in many cases. So, that brings us to GI dysfunction, because almost everybody has GI dysfunction. They have leaky gut. They have dysbiosis, and that has to be fixed too.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's part of the neuroendocrine system, the immune system, and that's why another thing, in Beyond Lyme Disease, I talk to people about the importance of eating uncontaminated food, because the stuff that's in our food supply today is the pesticides, the antibiotics, all that stuff is going to affect your gut flora. It can cause leaky gut, and then, it's kind of counterproductive if you're treating everything else and then your gut isn't working, because obviously your whole body is just going to go into a huge inflammatory response if your gut's, if you're eating foods that you're allergic to or that they're contaminated. Mm-hmm. And so that's also a really huge piece of it, I agree.
Yeah, and it is important to treat the inflammation, total body inflammation. That brings us to silicone. Silicone, when it leaks out, and it often does, even though the implant isn't very old, it's taken up by the macrophages, and then that's toxic, so it breaks open the macrophages, releasing all the cytokines and inflammatory intermediates. So some of our patients have really high C-reactive protein cardiacs, and they're just very, very inflamed.
And so then that's what you use the low-dose naltrexone for. Does that help with that?
I think the thing that helps with the inflammatory, I usually use curcumin, SR, coenzyme Q10, or UPQH usually, and if it's really bad, I'll use Inflammacor, which is a powder by Orthomolecular Research, which a bunch of different things in it. Take it twice a day, and it really helps with systemic inflammation. But I've seen it like really high from parasites too. I mean, inflammation doesn't tell you what's causing it. It could be chemical,
right,
like the silicone. It could be parasite. Could be, dysbiosis getting in there and wreaking havoc. It's just because somebody has a high inflammatory marker doesn't mean why they have it.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to muscle test why they have it and then treat that. But it is important, especially around the time of surgery, to bring that inflammatory marker down, because we believe it correlates with heart attack and stroke, which of course are risk of surgery. So, you know, we don't like to see a real high inflammatory. The highest ones I've seen are with like Crohn's disease and some Lyme's. I have a couple of Lyme's patients that have really like 35 C-reactive protein cardiacs. But they have a lot of joint. They have a lot of joint involvement. So
Well, and getting inflammation down is sort of a multifaceted thing too. You've got to watch your diet, and because I think that's one area where it's real easy to slip up, and you have a food allergy reaction, and that it just throws your body into an inflammatory tailspin. So I think the supplements you recommend are really essential, and then but also you got to, you know, work on the diet and these other factors, like any kind of contaminant that can cause inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was going to mention... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I just want to, before we end the interview, I want to mention electromagnetic radiation and pollution. You have a good chapter in there about that. Yeah. I interviewed Dr. Carlo, who did $20 million worth of research for the cellular phone industry, and when he wouldn't bury his research, his house got burnt down, and he wrote a book on the what he found, which was basically that cell phone radiation and other Wi-Fi type things can increase free radicals in the brain, and treatment for that is melatonin. You take 6 milligrams of melatonin before bed, and you can undo those free radicals.
Well, yeah, melatonin's been an important treatment for cancer too, and because of that. Mm-hmm. And I, and then on the topic of electromagnetic pollution, I think it's one of those things that sometimes we don't take it seriously because it's an invisible toxin. You don't always feel the effects at the time of exposure, but I've been to a number of lectures where they've proven that. You know, they talk about how mold reproduces, and infection, any infection really multiplies more rapidly in the presence of electromagnetic pollution, because Dr. Rao of the Swiss Paracelsus Clinic had mentioned that beneficial bacteria, their growth is halted in an atmosphere of high electromagnetic pollution, which means you get more bad bacteria, and I found, you know, one of the major symptoms of EMF exposure is insomnia, and I personally live that. I've had to move 3 times because of high electromagnetic fields, and Dr. Cowden, you know, who's a good friend of mine, he wrote this book series with me, had said, you know, you've got to get out of that EMF environment, and sure enough, you know, things really began to change when I did that. So it's one of those things I'm really passionate about, because I think we overlook it. We think it's convenient to use our cell phones, and it's really hard to say no, you know, to sitting there to talking on your iPhone, or, you know, just sitting in the bathtub scrolling through Facebook and you know, but I tell people it's really essential to do what you can to lower the electromagnetic fields in your environment. And we talk about how to do that in the online disease. So that is another thing to look at for sure.
Right. You know, you definitely can do some things that will help, and I think they're very important. I found out I had a nevus on my retina that was growing, like raising up, and so all of a sudden it became very important not to use a cell phone right next to it. You know, that thing was trying to turn. Yeah, exactly. So, and who, you know, if I hadn't gone to the eye doctor, I would have never known it was there. So,
And you know, Dr. Cold, I interview cancer doctors all the time, and they tell me that they're routinely seeing kids with brain cancer now from cell phones. And so, they're saying years ago that wasn't happening. So, anyway, it's a really, I agree. It's like you can, and sometimes, like you said, you can see the visible effects of what it does. While you're on the phone or in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm talking to you on a landline now. I use my cell phone mostly on speaker, and I try not to do interviews on the cell phone because of the long period of exposure, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, well, Dr. Norm Shealy, who you know, is a neurosurgeon who invented the TENS unit and is expert on all these electromagnetic things, said he tested everything and that the Q-Link little thing on your cell phone was most effective. So that's something mm-hmm. that we started carrying here was the Q-Link, the little disc
yeah.
that you can put on your cell phone or on your iPad or you know, on your computer. That would be good. But I did what you recommend in your book, which is to get a Gauss meter and look at everything in your bedroom. And what I found was my air purifier was putting out a huge amount of energy. And
Isn't
what was
that...
funny was it kept turning itself off. You know, I turn it on, it would turn itself off. Yeah, right. So I think
funny.
I had a little spiritual protection there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was the only thing in the room, really. I mean, everything else was pretty good. But, because when you're in your bedroom, I got a grounding sheet recently that
mm-hmm.
I think in retrospect, I had a little bit of a detox reaction. You know, I read your thing about grounding sheets and I sweated like crazy for a couple of nights using the grounding sheet.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
I didn't realize that, but until I read your book, but that probably was what was doing it.
Oh yeah, I was really tired the first week I used a grounding sheet. It was
really
quite
interesting.
Yeah. So it does do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I recently found out too. You know, the smart meters are kind of one of the hot topics in the electromagnetic pollution. And I had someone who sells EMS safety devices tell me that by turning off the circuit breakers at night, you're also reducing some of the effects of the smart meters. So it's not just the radiation that comes off the smart meters, which mm-hmm. goes through the wall wiring
through the house
as well. That's a simple thing anyone can do to reduce electromagnetic fields
mm-hmm.
during at least at night.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sleeping. So
and
have all the a lot of other topics because it's kind of a complicated subject. You know, there are different things you can do for different kinds of fields and. So, but we mention those and talk about those in Beyond Lyme Disease. I also have an article coming out
in Pound
and
Butter
and Bloomberg on that. Yeah.
Oh, great.
So,
great.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Yeah, absolutely. So the listeners can read more about my work at my website, which is ConnieStrasheim.com, last name Strasheim.com, or you can also send me an email at Connie@ConnieStrasheim.com. So all the information's there, and if anyone has any questions, you can also send me a personal email. I do my best to answer those, and you know, don't always get the chance to provide a long response, but I do try to answer all my messages. So. Thank you very much, Dr. Cole, for having me here today. It's been so much fun talking.
It has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the interview, and hopefully we can have you back on, maybe to talk about cancer or one of your other books. We'd be happy to do that.
That'd be great. Well,
great.
Thanks so much. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Have a great day. All right. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. Next week, we will be interviewing Barry Leica. Dr. Barry Leica has a radio show that I've been on several times. He has a book, Don't Choose a Cosmetic Surgeon Without Me. And then on the 27th of September, we have Aliens at My Fingertips, Real Meetings with Strange Beings by Sayward Iyer. And then Greg Braden will be back on his new book, The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. And isn't that the truth? And then on the 11th of October, Stephanie Sorrell, Depression, Understanding the Black Dog. We have, in September, we have a Millennium Healthcare event on the 23rd of September at the Dunwoody office. Dr. Nadia Denani will be giving her lecture on homeopathy, frequently asked questions, and basically we will have the Noetic Science meeting on the 18th. Sophia Wellman will be giving a film screening of her film Life, Death as Life. It's a study of death and spiritual consciousness, things around death. Anyway, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.